kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Just start getting questions, because there's like audience questions, and they start reading us like, do you even game? I'm just like, well, we've been talking about games.
Do you game, bro? Do you game? What do you game? What kind of game do you game?
Pretty much.
Well, I mean, that's a standard question here, though. What kind of game are you playing at the time? So
I don't think I've ever said, what kind of game do you game, though?
That's not correct,
I suppose. I'm going to start asking that. So what kind of game do you game on our game thing with the talking game?
But I understand what you mean. Yeah, we would have probably a generic Prisma one. Also, this is a lot longer intro than I was expecting.
Also, we haven't started.
I didn't even start the show yet. I should probably do that. So what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as usual is JC. JC, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I changed my name yesterday, actually, right before the tweet went out.
Nice. Good to know. Special guest joining us today, we have Hank Silman of Shiny Bolt Games. Hank, how are you doing?
Doing well.
Did I say Silman right? Is that?
Yeah, it is Silman.
Sweet. I got it.
At least one of our names were said right.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to get technical, I'm the third. I didn't hear a three at the end. You
know? Well, that's not a
your Skype name doesn't have a three.
I'm also the three, though, so
really?
Three partners.
I'm just me. I'm the original.
Well, that's boring.
I'm the original. My uncle's name is Joe, but...
Oh, well...
Yeah, learning stuff.
A long lineage of Dukes and Henrys are in my family, so...
So where is that from? Is that like a Southern thing, or...
Duke?
British, maybe? Are you Duke Silman?
Well, I guess. I didn't think about that ever, like the Archduke or something like that. But no, it's
Squire Silman.
Yeah, it's definitely a Southern name for a first name.
Yeah, I knew as soon as I saw Hank, I was like, well, I'm going to be able to easily understand him, and he's going to have an American accent, no doubt. Nobody outside of the U.S. is named Hank.
Yeah, if I go by Hank, my name's Henry or whatever, but it doesn't matter. That's not what this podcast is about.
So what
it could be?
What is this podcast about? You are here joining us to talk about your game that is on Kickstarter right now, called Prisma and the Masquerade Menace. Mm-hmm. So tell us about.
That's all you need to know.
So, all right, sounds good. It's been a good chat.
Bye. Yeah. So, our game's a boring platformer, colorful, no, but it is a platformer game, but it's a puzzle platformer. It's very colorful, try to be very charismatic as far as visuals are concerned, but it's super hard, but, you know, reasonably so, fair, I would say. And but the hook with it is you can switch between dimensions. So there's a lot of puzzle solving in that, and certain objects only exist in certain dimensions. So there's four total. There's like neutral, which is like everything off, and you can toggle all the other dimensions on. So there's blue, yellow, and red. And in each dimension, there's like a passive ability. So in blue, you can jump really high, and yellow, you can run really fast, and in red, you can break through objects. So the game sort of revolves around combining those powers efficiently, and then later on how things in the world react to those powers.
It gives me kind of an Ikaruga vibe with the whole color swapping.
Except
instead of two colors and just absorbing bullets and being a shooter, you are none of those.
So very different from that game in every way, except the color
change. The one mechanic that I just named.
I was thinking more along the lines of Guacamelee. At least it's a little more similar.
Yeah, it's a side-scroller, but you don't toggle dimension swapping so much. it is a big aspect, but in Prisma, you can you basically toggle on and off any dimension at any time, and it's very twitchy, so it's very fast, and you basically have to, part of the game is wrapping your head around how the mechanics themselves work, much like Ikaruga, I would say, but compounded twice. But Ikaruga was a really big influence for us, gameplay-wise, as well as, well, we used to say Super Meat Boy, but that's not really true anymore. We just wanted it to be hard.
So you're going for a difficult game here?
Yeah, but not like Super Meat Boy is like, used to be a good example, but it, that's what you say when you, you know, you want someone to get across that your game is hard.
It's hard. But I think Super Meat Boy at the time, everyone's like, oh, this is like the hardest game ever. And now with how difficult games have gotten, Meat Boy is like, it's kind of tough, but it's accessible.
Yeah, it's not I Want to Be the Guy or anything.
Oh, God.
I can't handle that.
Can I Want to Be the Guy?
That was not an influence. But I would say, as far as gameplay goes, core influences would be Ikaruga and Mega Man and Super Mario World. I was going to say three, but it was more World. And then on the art side of things, definitely is Wind Waker and Jak and Daxter, the first Jak and Daxter. We don't really talk about the second, the emo one.
I didn't like when it changed. I loved the first Jak and Daxter, and even when they released like the triple pack on PS3, I'm like, you know what? I'll get the first one.
The third one was good too.
Yeah, I like the third one, but for the cars. That's when they. That's Naughty Dog's secret bread and butter that they don't pull out too often. I was really hoping for an uncarded, but that didn't.
Uncarded. Happen. Oh my God.
That's actually pretty clever. I was trying to put that together for a second.
Oh my God. So yeah, I gotta ask quick, it's apparently pouring here. Is my microphone picking up the rain?
No.
Okay, good. Because I have my window open, given it's been like 60 degrees out today, it's friggin' December and it's hot as hell out.
I think you can only tell if you're talking. Then there's some in the back, but otherwise, like, it's not going on while you're not talking.
So if I just whisper now, you guys can hear the rain in the background. It was a dark and stormy night.
It's a little staticky. It just sounds like you have a bad microphone.
It's okay.
I mean, I'm not saying you're Microsoft. I'm not.
My Microsoft is terrible.
That was a different conversation. But I'm not saying your microphone's bad. I was just. I was saying it sounds like you have a bad microphone. Of the stat for the rain, it sounds like static.
It sounds so different when you put it like that. I'm not saying your mic is bad, but it sounds bad.
I'm saying your show's bad and you should feel bad. Oh, man.
Oh, we have fun.
And then just to make things even better, my cat jumped up on the desk to... you know, inspect what's going on outside, got hit with water, and then freaked the fuck out. And I am so happy that he didn't knock my soda over.
Good to know.
Yeah,
let's lower the window a bit. Just
wish he would have knocked the soda over, but it would have been funny. Good content. Joking.
I will cut you so hard.
Better than chewing out people's.
So yeah, Prisma and the Masquerade Menace. I apparently played this. At MAGFest last year,
it looked
familiar, and it wasn't until you said that you were at MAGFest showing off the game that I'm like, holy shit, I did play this game. So that's the risks that come with getting old, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Joe's getting very old. Very, very old. So.
I'm getting there. I really am.
He's like, I think 60 now?
Yeah, close.
Meanwhile, I'm apparently 12.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah. But what was it like showing it off at MAGFest? What all did you do there?
MAGFest was interesting because a few of us, there was three of us. Two of us had not gone to DC before. So it was more just being in the Northeast in general for the first time. because we hadn't gotten to PAX East or anything at that point either. I would say MAGFest was definitely really interesting. As far as an exposure to a big convention, I think that was our first big convention on the East Coast. Our first was PAX South, was our first big convention. I guess that's partially why, because, well, I'll get into that later. But as far as that goes, that was the first, like, down-to-earth, you know, gamers meeting developers, less, like, other developers meeting developers, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was much more relaxed. Although it was a weird year because we were in, like, a dark corner. Then we were near the stage, so everything was dim.
Are you hidden in the shadows?
Yeah, us and a few other people who are dev friends now with. But it was interesting. But it was a good experience. I think I more so like the food and the tiny what's that like little village right next to the convention center. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know what they call it, but.
In Atlanta, the equivalent would be Atlantic Station. But
Are you talking like the little town, like Baltimore Harbor? I thought you meant like the little place inside the hotel.
Oh, no, I forgot about that.
With like the fountain cool and the little building. Yeah, just Baltimore Harbor.
Yeah. I'm talking about right outside.
Ah.
Because the inside was always crowded. But it was cool. It was a lot of cosplay. Way more cosplay than any other convention I've been to.
Yeah, it's insane how big MAGFest has gotten. It's, oh man, it has grown.
Xylo in the chat asked, what year were we at PAX South? We were there last year and this year. We were at PAX Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I could see what Xylo said in the chat, but I got disconnected from chat and I won't reconnect.
Proud of you.
Love Beam.
I don't know what to tell you then. I'm not having any problems with Beam, so burn in hell, I guess. I don't know.
I popped out the chat. Let's see if it resets it.
Did you guys attempt going to MAGFest again this year? Because I know they had to start cutting people off with how many indie devs they've had there.
Interesting. They didn't have that many last year, so that was very interesting to hear. As far as developers, they have plenty of other, you know.
Yeah.
Everything else is packed.
Well, the whole indie showcase thing is fairly new for them.
Gotcha.
So it's been growing, though.
But no, we just didn't have anything really to. Well, we didn't really have anything to show, but it was that or PAX South was sort of our choice. So we're running thin on the marketing budget, I would say. So basically more bang for our buck would have been PAX South.
Makes sense. Where are you guys located? Where are you based?
Ooh, we're based out of Atlanta. I am a nomad, so I drive the booth everywhere. And we've gone, you know, to South and East and West. And I've driven to all of them. And it's just a little more viable than flying. And by the time you get to West, it's only about $50 cheaper.
Oh, wow.
Just because of all the flight and hotel stuff versus, like, on the way. I like driving, though.
Are you guys going to be
about... I like driving as much anymore.
Are you going to be at PAX East this year?
Not East. We may be at West again. The timing's real weird because... We want to show the game and what have you, but after Kickstarter, we want to, you know, hunker down and, you know, go dark for a while, assuming we're successful. If we're not, it'll be a different story. But if we're successful, we want to go dark for a while and really put it all in the game. So that way, when we reappear, hopefully at West, then, you know, be bigger and better than ever, sort of thing. Because last year we did everything and we barely had any time for actual development. We were always working to the next convention and made things go a lot slower than they needed to.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that we've had on, it's just you could either focus on the promotion or focus on the game, but it's so hard to split your effort between the two.
Right.
They're like girlfriends. You can't focus on two at the same time. You just got to pick one and stick with it.
No comment.
And some teams just handle that, can have more money, and they can handle that a little better.
Yes.
And they can handle there, all the women. That.
Yeah. Basically, get people to go for you.
So how much has the game evolved over the past year or so since MAGFest?
A lot. A lot on the back end, a lot in more so planning and previs, just to make sure that we have the whole game more or less mapped out. When we went to MAGFest, we just had the proof of concept, really.
Mm.
And it was similar to what we have, but less pretty and no boss battle or level select or anything like that. But after that, I guess within the year, we've been working on all that and polishing and getting the art for all the other worlds basically figured out and just pipeline engineering and stuff like that. So now that we're at Kickstarter, the basically we're our foot is like on the gas. We're like ready to go into high gear, I guess.
Yeah.
Now that we have a functioning car and know a destination and know where we're going. We're going to go with that metaphor.
Now you're just trying to bump gas money.
Yeah. Now we just, basically we need gas money for the trip.
Makes sense. What are your goals with the Kickstarter? Like, what are you trying to get the money for? What kind of rewards do you guys have? Stuff like that.
So our basic goal is to get development money. So money so we can finish the game, work on it, you know, full time. And our base goal is for three of us to work full time for 8 months, because that's sort of where we have figured out. And anything beyond that, which will basically add content and allow us to work longer and then add more people full time to help. Generally speaking, but as far as the content that's added, we plan on adding. I'll do this one at a time. But basically, one world which consists of five levels of boss and a hub area, and then another world, same thing, and that's sort of like where the true ending, like a fully realized version of the game is.
All right.
And then, which we will figure out how to release regardless. So even if we got 20,000, we would basically make that free DLC or whatever for people who backed. And after that, we have soundtracks, or not soundtracks, but guest tracks from, I guess... I don't know if I should say them in like proper order or whatever, but I don't know if there is a proper order, but basically Norihiko Hibino, which he's the, I guess the composer for Bayonetta and the Metal Gear Solid series.
Oh, wow.
So he has agreed to step in. And later on, this is really a stretch goal, I would say, but at the 125K mark, there's Hitoshi Sakamoto, and he would be more or less producing a track for us. He's the Final Fantasy XII composer.
Nice. Who's doing the main soundtrack for the game?
So the main soundtrack for the game is Alex Liberatore. He's been our friend for a long time. He's been since the project was like a student project forever ago. Before we decided to make it a real thing. And he actually has done a few movies now. I wish I don't have his stuff on hand, but he's worked on a few games and feature film and stuff. He's got a Sundance Film Festival. There's an indie film he did this past time it came around. So I'm trying to remember what the name of the film was. It's very arts.
Xylo in chat seems interested in the speedrun mode that you guys are kicking around.
Oh, yes, that would be next. I was going in order, like, what's the next? But anyway, yeah, so the next stretch goal is a speedrun mode. So we actually, our game is designed already from the ground up to run through the whole thing, literally. So when you get the yellow power and you can run really fast, it's designed so you never have to slow down. But along with that, we're going to include a few features, we'll sort of integrate it with the story. We have a character that would be the catalyst for all this, but we would include features that actual speedrunners use in the game, so like just time trackers and stuff like that, like best time, lap. How do I describe it? But how about I was a speedrunner in the speedrunning community?
How they have like the little times on the side of like your best run and then your combined best and sum of all best runs.
Right, right. And then like your average, your runs and stuff. Basically a lot of tracking to help you with that. And besides that, it'll link all the levels together. So there's no hubs or anything. There's no level select. It just goes directly to the next level. If you want to play like that, you can do a 100% version as well. And then it'll be everything. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like if you were just playing the game regular and trying to 100% it. And beyond that, I think that might be the last thing revealed. Oh, wait. No, not quite. There's a the PS Vita version. For the at 80K, and that's for a port. We're working with Limited Run Games right now to
make
a physical version. There's a few things we have to do on our end first. There's a gentleman's agreement, but as far as before they can promote or anything, or we can promote it on the Kickstarter, we have to show a build running on Vita, and we have the dev kit and stuff. So hopefully we can get that before the Kickstarter is over. Because if that's the case, then they'll start advertising as well. So I don't have to just tell you. Yeah. You find out about it that way. But either way, we do plan on working with Limited Run if the project's successful. Anyway, it's just a matter of making that an actual tier that you can buy.
That's really cool.
So either way, there'll be a physical version for PS4 and Vita down the road, but hopefully we can get that in the next month. I think that's it for all I'm going to talk about. Anyway, of course we have like the ridiculous ones if it had exploded, but I'm not going to embarrass myself with all those.
What is the highest tier that you guys have? Like the highest stretch goal that you, because I know a lot of people put like joke ones at the end.
Uh-huh.
So what are your highest ones that you know, just like realistically, we would never get this, but let's put it at the end just in case.
One of them was a fully orchestrated soundtrack, like actual orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And then we are basically going to get provided, if we got to that point, we'd have to do some consulting. But I think this might be the first time David in the chat is hearing this, and he would be someone who would need to know. But basically to get Norihiko us do like five tracks instead of just one, but that'd be something I have to like consult or whatever. But that's like that's with the orchestrated thing, and that was at like 900,000 or something. And then at a million, there was just an alternative story mode where you play as Fractal, who is sort of our poster child. If you've seen our Twitter at all, she's like our handle or whatever. She's kind of like the frenemy, the big bad good. She's your best friend, but also the bad guy, sort of.
Is she your Ada Wong, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a little more happy. Not brooding. Less sexy. More of a... She's a kid.
Less emo.
Yes, less emo. Yeah.
Crawling in my skin.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, how is the Kickstarter doing so far?
So far we have, let's see, I will look on the back end, but we are, it looks like 6,500 in, and I have, well, there's pending. It might go up a few thousand dollars. There's something pending that we're waiting on. When I say we, my Kickstarter account is waiting on.
Is it like a big donor, one of like the big ticket items?
Yeah. It's a 2K.
Oh wow!
Donor. So we'll see if that happens. Okay, so our highest tier is actually $1,500, so I don't know why it's $2,000. Even with shipping, that would be, I think you just add $50. But basically, you get the 3D printing data of any character of your choosing or your own character, because in the $1,000 tier, you get basically a character modeled after you. We'll put them in the game and you can talk to them. They'll be in the NPC.
Nice.
And you can talk to pretty much anyone in the play space in the game. I don't know if that's quite in the demo. I don't think so. I think we haven't cleared that of bugs yet, because they're trying to figure out, make sure they don't say each other's lines. But besides that, you get, you know, character of your likeness in the game and, 5 copies of the game, and, hand-drawn illustration by our team assigned. And, I'm just going through all these, but, a vinyl of the OST, and that would include, if we got stretch goals for, you know, Norihiko and stuff. And where'd it go? Oh, you get, we have 2 shirts that we'll be revealing the designs for in the next day or two, and a backer update. But you get both shirts. There's basically a more masculine and a more feminine version. So it's just your preference, but you'll get both. And you'll get a printed art compendium, which includes the art book and the a narrative booklet. And there's a lot of stuff.
That sounds like a lot. It sounds like you guys are going all out for the big ticket spenders.
Yeah. And let's see. Art book, world lore booklet, and key art for the game. So, like, any posters or whatever that aren't actually, like, you know, concept art or anything. And then signed poster. I think that covers everything. Oh, and a sticker book.
Can't forget the stickers.
Yeah. If you spend $60, you get a sheet. But if you spend, if you put that much money down, you get a whole book. It'll be 6 sticker sheets, and those will be revealed in the. Well, I guess one of them will be revealed tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. Yep, one of them will be reveal tomorrow. So
nice. So what are some of the smaller entries, like the smaller tiers that we'll probably see significantly more traffic than the $1,500 tier? Yes.
But if, by all means, if three or four of you want to jump on the $1,500. So the base tier gives you a copy of the DRM-free digital copy of the game. And that's through Steam. We're working on maybe GOG or itch.io for people who really just don't like Steam for DRM-free.
Yeah.
But we're not confirming any of that yet because we need to make sure that's correct. But we do have, it is actually DRM-free if you use Steam. We have both versions. So if you want DRM or DRM-free. But beyond that, the $15 tier, that was $10 tier. The $15 tier gives you the same thing, but with a PDF instruction booklet and a set of backer-only wallpapers.
Yay!
And then at $20, you get alternative player skins of the main character, only for Kickstarter backers. And everything, basically every single tier includes everything before it. And at 25, you get beta access and your name in the credits. So we will be shipping a beta version around December or so, depending. And then at $30, you get the world lore booklet, which includes all the narrative that's in the game. Like, there's a lot of dialogue, but also, like, lore on each area that you're in, just from a narrative point of view, a written perspective. And I think, I don't know how high you want me to go, but there's all the way up to, I would say, you know, 60 is probably the highest normal tier, yeah. I would say. And that's basically where the sticker sheet is. That's the first physical tier. And then before that, you get the OST and the art book.
Is that going to be a soundtrack disc or just download?
It'll be download. Nice. At 40. I mean, if you want the physical one, I think vinyl is actually the only option at the moment. We just don't know. We don't have any partnerships with any printers at the moment, but that might be something in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, everybody loves a good CD every now and then to rip it and then put it on a shelf to never touch again.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, that's why we only just offered a digital at this point.
Yeah. I mean, CD burners exist. You could do that.
Yeah. I want it to be good, though. If we're gonna do it, I want it to be like printed and with a nice case and
stuff. Yeah.
No point in half doing it, especially if someone's gonna give you money for it.
So you mentioned the beta you're looking to do around December. What kind of release window are you looking at for a full release? Like mid 2018, something like that.
So at the base funding at 20. Yeah, the actual release would be like December-ish, like late December. That's if we got any of our stretch goals, it would basically add 2 to 3 months per, for the first two, for that actually adds like the worlds and stuff, it would add up to 6 months. So then it would be mid-2018, like you said. At the base funding, we're shooting for the end of this year. And then the beta would be like almost a month before shipping, on Steam. That wouldn't be console or anything yet.
What consoles are you looking at? I know you mentioned PlayStation before. Are you guys considering, like possibly Switch, 3DS? Personally, I know on our show we are Xbox One fans, so. Mm-hmm.
We're planning on PS4, Xbox One, the Vita, and Switch. Our primary audience right now, that's not to say everyone, but everyone who has wind of the game at the moment, our primary audience is on Vita.
So I believe it seems everyone we talk to, when asked about a Vita game, everybody wants a Vita version. It seems like the only one who doesn't want to put stuff out on the Vita is fucking Sony. Which yeah, doesn't make much. Sense.
Yeah. But so that's our primary port planned. I think along the way we'll actually have stuff for the PS4 and Xbox One versions, just because of how the transition to get stuff to work on Vita works.
Yeah.
So it may not be the first to come out, but it'll be the first that we are actively trying to port to.
Nice. And that's good to hear when a lot of games recently are seeing either like Kickstarters canceled for the Vita or their ports delayed on the Vita. So to hear you guys are like targeting the Vita is awesome news.
Yeah, it's the first on our stretch goals for consoles.
So. Sweet. That is very, very cool to hear. CJ, do you have any questions? You've been silent, which always scares me.
He's been in awe.
I
don't know what you're plotting over there.
Well, I don't know. I'm just looking at these stretch goals and wondering. I think they're pretty cool. There's a lot of stretch goals that, like, towards the end of the page, it just gets black. Like, you can't actually see what they are. Are you guys planning to, like, keep editing that as you go across and more become, like, visible?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I was saying earlier, like, we have actually planned to 1 million if that, for some reason, for ridiculousness happened. I mean, I doubt at this point because it's not the first day anymore. Yeah. But we did want we did the slowly fade out just to let you guys know that, you know, there is more and we would add on to it, or at least, you know, hint at it. But first things first, gotta get the base goal.
Yeah, 20,000 is the important one right now.
Yeah. I like David in chat, David Bruno. I heard of him. I think I talked to him once or twice, saying that the Vita is turning into the Dreamcast of handhelds.
Ew.
Which sounds...
Why would you say that?
Because the Dreamcast is awesome, and it was ignored way before its time.
I don't know. I'm a GameCube kid.
Hell yeah, man.
Dreamcast seemed like a bad dream. let me just throw David under the bus. I'm sure he'll like that.
I think the GameCube was the first system that I ever like bought on launch day. Like it was the day after Thanksgiving. It was on Black, or no, it wasn't. I just went and got it on Black Friday. I drove like an hour and a half away to a KB Toy Stores that said they had them in stock. And I was there. I ended up paying like $30 extra just because it was KB Toys and they would mark shit up.
Gotcha.
Never even heard of a KB Toys.
That doesn't surprise me.
I don't remember KB Toys. And I'm 25, so.
Well, I'm only 18.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't around mid-30s.
When the GameCube was popular.
You damn kids and your Android telephones and your Beats headphones and get off my lawn.
Xylo in the chat asked, if I may ask, is there a specific stretch goal you are more excited to reach? I would say Vita is probably the one I'm excited to reach because that means a lot more, I guess, it's sort of selfish because there's a lot more security on us. At 80 is basically where, like, we're, like, good to go. Like, if something messes up, that we're at the threshold where we can mess up a little bit at that point. So nothing, you know, goes perfect in game development, so... In a weird way, that's why I'm excited about that, if we got it.
I'm definitely rooting for that one. If you don't make the stretch goals, are you guys still going to look into consoles an eventuality thing?
Yes, yes. Yeah, it would not stop us. It's just more of a simultaneous delivery, and we'd have the safety net, though, where we could just do that and have the full-fledged project. But yeah, we don't want people thinking that, you know, if we only get 20, 30,000, that's, you know, all that other stuff, all those grand plans aren't going to happen at all.
Console peasants could sit on the sidelines.
Yeah. I mean, because we're primarily like Nintendo people, oddly enough. So, but we also have Vitas. So we definitely want to migrate to consoles. It's definitely for the cost side of things, just developing for PlayStation and Xbox and all that. So basically what we would do is supplement what we do sell at 20,000, use that to supplement development for the other stuff. It would be the idea.
Nice. I love David Bruno in chat trying to make me feel even older, asking if I remember the Toys R Us ticket system. Do you guys remember the Toys R Us ticket system?
I do, but not firsthand.
Basically, what it was when you went to Toys R Us and you wanted a game, you looked at their wall and they just had plastic flaps with the game cover art. And behind the flap, there would be tickets. If they had the game, you would take a ticket up to a counter and give it to a guy. And he'll be like, let me go in the back and get you your game, young man. And then you had those horrible, horrible times where there would be one ticket left. And you would be so excited. And you would go to the counter proudly holding that ticket for Super Mario Brothers 3 or Wizards and Warriors or whatever else you want. And you give it to the guy and he comes back 5 minutes later saying, I'm sorry, we must have sold out. It's like, you sons of bitches. You honey dick me with a ticket for a game that's not here. Oh, those friggin' tickets. Nightmare inducing.
That's a new term on for me, for honey dicking.
Yeah, he says weird things on the show.
Hey, I got that from that Seth Rogen, James Franco movie, The Interview. That's where I got honey dicking.
Is it the same as catfishing, but with products? Instead of people?
No, it's still like a person thing. It's like, what the hell is the example they use? Like a girl like trying to seduce you so you would do something. And then as soon as you do it, they're just like, eh, okay, bye.
I remember.
It's like, you honey dick me. So,
yeah.
Toys R Us, they seduce you. They seduce you with a ticket for a game. And you get up there and they leave you hanging. Sons of bitches. So, I feel I have to ask this after earlier in the show, but Hank, what kind of games do you game?
What kind of games do I game? Do I game?
Are you game? Yeah. Are you play game?
Well, I'll try to work backwards because while I think, but right now I just finished Super Mario Run of all things.
Nice.
But I had to get the cake and get all the black coins.
Is it worth the $10? Because I just like last week got an iPhone 7.
Oh yes, it is. It's probably the hardest Mario game.
Oh, nice.
Which is lost on some people.
I've been waiting for Payday to pick up an iTunes card, and I'm thinking that'll be like the first thing I really buy for the system.
It's one of those, if you play it casually, you probably won't get super like that much out of it. But if you're like a hardcore Mario person and like the harder stuff, once you basically start collecting coins, which are like, you know, there's 5 in each stage or whatever. But after you start collecting them, the truth of what they want the game to be kind of, you know, folds out of the onion, so to speak.
His layers.
Yeah, by the end, it's like nightmare inducing. The very last stage is harder than the Super Mario 3D World, like the Rainbow Road at the very end. You know what I'm talking about? The very last one. It's harder than that.
Oh, God.
Just because everything is lava, everything is spike wheels of death. It's really fun at the end. That last one was real hard. But yeah, I would recommend it. but besides that, I guess lately, I just another mobile game. I'm a Nintendo guy primarily, which is, it's been a rough few years. but I just picked up Fire Emblem Heroes, and I
Xylo in chat, game. Try Fire Emblem Heroes, so much fun.
yeah.
I played a few rounds of that. I'm having fun with that.
It's very strange to me because it's a lot like I play a lot of mobile games actually, but not like Farmville or whatever. I play random ones or very anime induced. but Fire Emblem Heroes, their system reminds me a lot of like the standard Japanese freemium system, which I call the Love Live system. I don't know if you know what Love Live is.
No.
Or the Puzzles and Dragons system. Two other games I played a lot. But it's all like the currency is luck based. I mean, like you buy the currency, but you buy things that require luck. So it makes you buy more, basically. But I like that system usually, but it's very dangerous because it's designed to make you addicted. So, I mean, like, actually, like, which is weird. But anyway, besides mobile stuff, I would say the last game on consoles I played, not when it came out, but like recently, probably I went back and played Nier. The original Nier.
Nice.
I've had it for a while, and I wanted to catch up to play Nier Automata. I like that it's getting a second life. I know when I got it originally, not a lot of people I knew played that game.
I loved the original Nier. I'm honestly just bummed that they're not bringing the second one to Xbox, because I played the first one on Xbox 360. I don't know. I just, exclusive crap pisses me off anymore.
Yeah, and that was so weird because even I had the PS3 version, but you got a different game than me. Yeah. I never played the Xbox One version, and when someone like tried to explain what they were playing to me the first time, I didn't know that they were playing Nier because the plot's like parallel or whatever. I didn't realize it was so different. So I would like to at some point play the 360 version as well. I don't know if I have time before Nier Automata comes out, but just to get all the sides of the story.
Well, I'm assuming if it's coming out on only PlayStation, it'll probably follow more along the lines of the PlayStation 3 storyline.
I don't know, maybe.
From what I hear, the new one isn't even that much of an RPG. It's just a lot more action-oriented. I haven't tried the demo. I know they have a demo on the PlayStation Store, but I'm kind of just going to go into the game blind.
Yeah, it's like the bosses are sort of similar. They're like still the bullet hell sort of thing going on. A lot more so this time. But they went like, you know, double dipped into the bullet hell part, basically, is what it seems like.
Yeah.
I've played the demo, but I don't think I beat the boss. I think that's what I was on. But that's what I play. I play other stuff too, but that's what that's all I've played recently.
What other stuff do you game?
So what games do I game for gaming?
What other games do you game?
I would say my cornerstone, like my, you know, my golden age of gaming, was definitely, go figure, Wind Waker and Jak and Daxter. I'm the art director on Prisma. I guess that's should be known. That's probably why that is directly related for those styles. But I really like both those games a lot. Definitely like a few other mascot, PlayStation games and Nintendo games. I mean, I like Halo 1 and 2 as well when those came out. And, that was probably the only original Xbox games that I played a lot. because I didn't have Psychonauts or at the time and didn't really know about them. But I don't know. I play a lot of games. Those are the ones I keep having to reference because of things like this.
I mean, they're classics. You can't go wrong with the original Jak and Daxter and Wind Waker. I'm one of those guys who I prefer the older top-down Zelda games. Like, I couldn't get into Majora's Mask. I couldn't get into Ocarina of Time. I couldn't get into Twilight Princess. But Wind Waker was fantastic because it felt like an old Zelda game. Hmm. At the time, everyone shit on it because it looks so cartoony.
It's one of those feel-good games. Which reminds me, Super Mario Sunshine, probably underrated, but as another good feel good game in my opinion. As far as like bright, colorful, island theme, very very in the similar vein of Wind Waker in that regard.
Just so underappreciated for the time.
Yeah, I think it'll be released probably at E3. It'll probably be like, hey. GameCube classics are up, and the GameCube classic collection will be on the eShop or whatever, and I'm sure they'll have it remastered or at least re-released.
Yeah, I wish Nintendo would do more compilation stuff, but they know that people will just buy single games over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah, they like money.
Yeah. Who doesn't like money?
I certainly do, because I'm asking people for money on the internet.
Hey, money! So, how excited are you for the Switch? Are you on the hype train? What the fuck?
Did a cat knock over your stuff?
I just heard a loud bang, and I don't know what it was.
It's probably some of your collectibles. You better be careful. Loot will get all mad.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not seeing anything knocked over anywhere.
Well,
needless to say, I am scared shitless right now because I'm scared what I'm going to walk over to later.
Oh, that's not good. What was the question?
So yeah, are you on the Switch hype train?
Oh yeah, I definitely am. Not as much as I'd like to be. There's just because that presentation was so bad. The Japanese one.
Yeah.
All the content seems good. It's that presentation killed a lot of it for me. the hype anyway. I would say, yeah, I mean, we're really excited as a whole, as a company. We have, we're on board to get a dev kit and everything. We're in line. There's a long line right now to get a dev kit. So we probably won't get it for another month. I would say as far as interest is concerned, definitely a lot of interest from the indie community, even just based on, that supplementary knowledge.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited for it. I have my pre-order made, so.
And I'm not excited for it. Yay.
Team Neon.
Why not?
I've never really been a Nintendo guy. It might be because my age, and I grew up when Nintendo wasn't exactly the big dog anymore. But, just the games don't really interest me too much. Like, I haven't even played a Zelda game before.
I think that means you have no soul.
Pretty much. Like, every week he gives me new reasons to wonder why I keep him on the show.
Well, yeah, if I don't do that, then,
I never played a Zelda game before. Get the fuck off my show.
I'm always just keeping you on your toes,
You gonna play the new one?
No.
Why?
Because I'm not gonna get a Switch. I don't have the kind of money for that.
Well, it's for Wii U, too.
I don't have my sister has a Wii U, but...
I was gonna say, Wii U would be dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
If you could find one.
Because they discontinued it, so maybe it will stay similar.
I'm not interested, though.
Wii Us are going to be collector's items now.
Yeah. I got mine day one, so it's it's collecting dust still.
Yeah. So I'd rather save the money and buy like a $1,000 Xbox One Scorpio whenever the hell that comes out. It should be sometime later this year.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft seems on the up and up as far as making good business decisions. I would like to see where they go in the future, because they're at the point where they have to grow or they're just not going to be in the console game anymore.
So, well, I think they got a better chance of lasting than PlayStation. PlayStation's only good thing is the consoles. Everything else they have is not doing well.
What are you talking about? They have movies.
Oh, their movie division, their music division, like their computer television divisions, everything is going in down for Sony except for their PlayStation division. That's one of the only things keeping them afloat lately, but they're killing it with the PS4. They're printing money with that thing.
Lately it's reversed. I think the movies will come back though. The reason that went down more or less is because the scandal, the hacking or whatever. And,
the interview. So, they got honey dicked.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, everything went down, I think, on the movie side because of that. But I think they'll catch back up with movies at least, if only for Spider-Man and things like that, because they're playing nice. They're making some smart decisions.
Yeah.
As long as they understand their audience, they should be fine. Same thing with Microsoft. I think they're starting to understand their audience a little more. They were riding really high on 360 and didn't really have to change. But yeah, all change with the new generation that need to pivot.
I'm hoping that Microsoft will start to pay more attention to first party development and securing exclusives. Because everyone's like, oh, well, exclusives aren't important. But then you look at, like, Tales of Berseria, Yakuza 0, Bloodborne, Horizon Zero Dawn. There's just so Charter. Much stuff that, you know, they matter.
All in Naughty Dog.
Yeah.
Everything in Naughty Dog.
Well, yeah. It's just...
Nier?
What fucking Microsoft exclusives are coming out this year? Anyway, like, there's only a few.
Halo Wars 2 just came out.
Yeah, that's the big one probably this year. And then Forza Motorsport 6 is going to come out because...
Yeah.
Because every fucking year they have to push out some Forza game.
Yeah, I don't mind. It's an every other year thing between Realistic and Horizon. So yeah. I'm cool with an every other year thing with Forza. That's fine.
Yeah, the Motorsport games are a little more boring. And then what, there's Sea of Thieves... Crackdown maybe this year, and
they have to launch something.
Maybe like Cuphead.
Oh yeah, forgot about
Cuphead. Has been pushed how many times?
I could imagine Crackdown being a game that released with a Scorpio as like a launch game.
Very possible,
because that's a game that looks like it's going to require a lot of power and it's going to look really good.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Anyway, I know we've been chatting with you for about an hour now, Hank. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or any other topics you want to cover?
I don't know. There's a lot of tiny stuff. I would say as far as announcements go, I think so. I don't know. When does this go live? Like
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yep.
So I think
this will be our Friday episode.
Okay, so I think for that, there should be an update by then. But we're doing a sweepstakes sort of thing with our Kickstarter, and basically anyone who pledges $25 or more will be eligible for the $1,000 tier reward.
Holy shit!
So. Basically, yeah. So that was sort of going to be the announcement tomorrow. So
that would be ridiculous.
That would really suck, though, if you donated $1,500, got entered, and won the $1,000.
Oh,
imagine getting downgraded for winning.
Well, yeah, the people who did the, yeah, the people who donated $1,000 are not eligible. So
why are you excluding them? That's not fair to them.
They already get one. I know they pay more money, but...
Man, that would be insane to donate $25 to a Kickstarter and end up getting the rewards of such a massive tier. That's a really, really cool promotion to do.
Well, hopefully several more people think that. But yeah, we realized that we could do that at this point. So, for crunching numbers, basically.
Yeah. Well, as of when this show will go live, you guys have just over 2.5 weeks left. So I think you could pull it off. I know we're going to be hyping on the show. We'll be tweeting out about it. I hope you guys nail it, because the game looks fantastic. From what I remember playing it at MAGFest, it was a really cool mechanic with the... I think it's changed so much since MAGFest that's why it didn't click with me right away. I guess that happens after a year. And old man brain.
Old man brain. Oh, one last thing in the chat. David Bruno says Prisma Amiibos win. So I can't say we'll have Amiibos, but we will have 3D printing data. So maybe one day we'll have figures or something. That's like one of our dreams, because we have a...
I'll put a Prisma Amiibo right next to my Shovel Knight Amiibo.
Yeah, maybe. But
that'd be cool as hell. That really would.
It would be. I don't know how likely that is at all. You know, Yacht Club's got some insider information.
True.
Working with Nintendo forever. At WayForward, anyway. But anyway, it's an idea that we like, David, is all I'm saying. Is it one we can do? I don't know. But
maybe
we're
one
certainly
day.
Capable. Yeah.
Get your PR guy on that. Make that happen. Who's your PR guy? Get him to work.
I don't remember his name.
Oh, man. Well, Hank, it has been fantastic chatting with you for the past hour. I'm definitely pulling for you guys with this Kickstarter to make it. I am very eager to see how the game progresses and to see, hopefully, it comes out this fall.
Yeah, for real. I hope so, too.
I'm pulling for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Or hope it comes out next year with the extra stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Okay,
if it doesn't come out this year, hopefully that's good news.
I am looking forward to your mid-2018 release.
Yeah, thanks.
On the PS4, the Vita, the Xbox One, the Switch, the Virtual Boy,
all of
the Dreamcast, the Atari Jaguar, ColecoVision,
the WonderSwan.
Fuck yeah, WonderSwan! Holy shit! Someone else remembers the WonderSwan.
Oh, I had to learn all that in school.
Damn, that's awesome.
You can thank school for that.
What school teaches about the WonderSwan?
The Savannah College of Art and Design.
Interesting.
We have to take a video game history course. I could go on for hours about SCAD and how the pros and cons.
Oh, man. We'll have to get you back on again sometime for like a non-promotional episode. You could just talk about...
Oh, yeah. The upbringing of Prisma is probably, if not more interesting than the Kickstarter. So.
Well, again, Hank, it was fantastic having you on. Do you have any other plugs or anything else that you want to say to end your segment?
Sure. So if you want to follow Twitter or follow Prisma on Twitter, it's project_Prisma. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Majesty's Third. So yeah, if you want to keep up with all things Prisma or just me, you like me, it's fine. I'm not really a personality, but, you know, maybe I will be, who knows. Tim Schaefer and I know each other.
So
let's start mutually.
All right. Well, you have yourself a good night, Hank.
You too. All Love right. you.
Take yeah, care.
See ya. See ya.
Oh, that was fun.
I should start eating before these episodes so that I don't feel dead.
You had time in between.
Yeah, I didn't feel so good. So I didn't want to eat the dinner that I have because it's fried chicken and that's going to be greasy. So I didn't want to get sick.
Fried chicken.
It's good fried chicken, but it's... No.
Well, we'll try to run through the rest of this stuff fairly quick, although I'm sure that won't happen because we have so much shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of reviews, a lot of news, and even a giveaway, I heard.
Yeah, we have a awesome, awesome giveaway to do right now. Just recently, Microsoft teamed up with Curve Digital to release a instant indie hits collection. It is 10 games from Curve Digital. Normal retail price for the bundle would be $99.99, which by itself is pretty much a steal given the games that are in there. But they're selling it for a limited time for $20.
I know. I'm sad that I'm going to miss that because that is so many games. $20
for 10 games. 10.
Yeah, that's like Humble Bundle level shit. Like, that's a really good bundle.
It really is. It is ridiculous how much they are giving. I'm trying to pull up the page that has it so I could rattle off all the games. I remember most of them, but not all of them.
I remember a lot of them, but no, I don't recall everyone. I know some of them are real easy completions. Some of them are real tough completions.
Yeah. I'm getting a bad hiss from you right now, by the way.
That's really weird. Maybe I should turn down my mic.
Probably.
But this is the mic that you bought me, so it shouldn't be hissing. I turned it down.
Yeah, sounds better.
All right. But yeah, we normally adjust that before because
of the whole other person being there.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And then usually it just stays okay, but for some reason it got like super loud.
Yeah, that's weird. But oh well.
Anyway, let us see here. Stickbold, Dodgeball Adventure, Nova 111, Thomas Was Alone, 10 Second Ninja X, The Swapper, Stealth Inc. 2, Action Hank, Ollie Ollie, Hugh, and The Swindle. All of those for $20.
Yeah, I really want that. That's a good deal.
You have 2 weeks left to pick it up. Or
that's $2 a game.
Or you could possibly win one right now. Bam, 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 bam. Motherfucking instant indie collection. Brought to you by Curve Digital, who were awesome enough to send us not one, but two codes to give away. Two of them. And we
Awesome. Wow, two.
And we have 10 people vying for these two codes. So this is going to be a fun competition, and it's the only giveaway we're doing this week. So if you lose this one, tough shit.
So we're going to re-roll if Xyla wins.
First email. We wanted you to tell us why you want the collection. And our first email comes from Raheel K, who says, would give away to someone else probably, or I might try myself for the massive achievements that come with this collection since I'm an achievement hunter. Might do giveaway or earn achievements.
Interesting.
Next one is from some guy named Ricardo Souza, who says, my last
Doesn't
email...
Doesn't he own all these anyway?
Probably. this one has a video to go with it, so I'm going to throw up the monitor quick, I think. Nope, wrong one. That one? Yeah. No, that's still the wrong one. Son of a bitch. Why is everything wrong here? Here, I'll just do that. He says, as I stretch out the image here, hey, SML, my last email was too long and you guys complained about that. So this one's going to be a very short and true answer for the question. Why do you want these 10 games? Souza, because I never win, and a man got to have a code. And then a picture of Omar from The Wire saying, a man got to have a code. Thanks for the chance.
He wins everything.
Yeah, seriously. I never win. You fucking liar.
Souza.
Oh, man.
Although he didn't win Zombie Vikings last night because he got rerolled.
Did it?
That's the joke between Xylos, because Xyla wound up winning it because Souza and Blitz both got rerolled.
Why?
Because the guy that was hosting the giveaway didn't like them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a shitty thing to do, but that's what happened. So,
just because he didn't like him, it's like, oh, Souza won. No, fuck him.
Yep, basically.
Wow, Carnage, why do you have to be so mean?
Yeah, fucking Carnage, am I right? It was Carnage, for sure.
Anyway, next email is from Brian Martinez, who says, hey guys, what's going on? I'd love the chance to enter for your giveaway. I'd love to play these games because I'm an absolute fanatic about indie games. It's all about experimenting with, it's all I've been experimenting with lately. I've been playing games like The Assembly, Nevermind, Uncanny, I guess Uncanny Valley, just says Uncanny. Yeah. Party Hard, Ruby, etc. I truly believe there are a lot of hidden gems in the Xbox store that never get any attention. I'm an active gamer and active on Twitter. If given this opportunity, I'd love to review each and share my experience with my followers. My Twitter handle is at MartinEEEE. Or no, just three E's. Mar10EEE. Thanks for the chance sent from my Virgin mobile phone. I told you, I read these emails. Next email is from Aroto. Welcome back for another entry, Aroto, who says, holy shit, that's a killer bundle right there. Dude, the Shapes puzzle and Thomas Was Alone are freaking awesome. If that wasn't enough to pleasure you, maybe thinking with doubles and triples of you will help, because the Swapper brings that to the table. I remember playing more humble versions of such a concept on Newgrounds, and now the Swapper comes up as a bigger budget version of those concepts, and I hope I could play it. The other games are on the same level, but in different aspects. Hugh got the colors, Ollie Ollie got the speed and precision, Stealth Inc. 2 is the patience game that will test my ADD pills. In a nutshell, this fucking bundle is better than sex. There, I said it. Here's a little poem I made to celebrate the possibility of winning these. Thomas was alone, life wasn't even, but then he found the game, Nova 1 11. That doesn't rhyme.
11.
Nova 1 11. In 10 Second Ninja, you can't flinch, just like when you play Stealth Inc. That doesn't... Like, I could see that...
No, the poems don't have to rhyme, though.
They should, though.
I mean, it does sound better, but they don't have to. It is a thing.
You can't flink when you play Stealth Inc. I guess. Oh.
Yes.
Friendship problems, try Stick Bold to rekindle, or perhaps forget your troubles by playing The Swindle. See, that one rhymes. To play Ollie Ollie, you don't need to be a rapper. Think with clones when you play The Swapper. Close. That was closer.
Really try it on these ones. Like,
the Swapper. The Swapper. The action Hank character looks like my dad. Haha. Oh shit. I think he heard that. Check out Hugh. I'll be right back. P.S. Anyway, I hope you get this. Hit me back just to chat. Truly yours. Your biggest fan. This is Stan. poem.
Ask us her too. Like, wow.
That's a pretty good entry.
Yeah. I like that one.
Next email.
That's a good contest.
Yeah. Next email from Leon Claymore, who says, I only know a few of the games in the bundle personally, but watching videos, it seems like a complete package to bring a holiday vacation with you. There's something for everybody. God, I wish these types of bundles were made more often, but not everyone wants to share a spotlight. Yeah, spare a shotlight. I guess, so count me in on this. I want to try them all. And thank you for the support. The teeth extraction went well.
Oh, yeah. Leon did get one game. That's right.
Wants to see more bundles. I wish we would. Like, I wish more people would do bundles like that. I think it's awesome of Curve to be like, you know what? Let's bundle together a shitload of our games.
And then put it on a huge discount. I mean, it's already on a discount even without that huge discount, but it's a discount. It's, we heard you like discounts, so we put discounts in your discounts.
Yeah, pretty much. Next email from Catherine Batty, who says, yo, Joe, I should win because I'm adorable. I get beat up by 2-year-olds every day and I need something good in my life. Really, though, I came home today with my knee hurting so badly because I fell at work. And in order to not land on a child, I slammed my knee into a tile floor, then comforted the crying child who I scared by falling while bravely ignoring my bleeding knee. Ricky or Ricky Hammercunt the Brave.
Oh, it's Hammercunt.
But she doesn't own an Xbox.
What?
She doesn't own an Xbox.
Are you sure that she doesn't?
Yeah, I think she just emailed to, like, be a part of the contest because I was on Chris's stream last night, who will be here later in the show, supposedly.
Yeah.
and mentioned the contest. And I think she just saw the tweet and entered but didn't realize it's an Xbox-only thing.
Oh, okay. So disqualified, but, you know, good shot.
Bleeding knee. I'll just put that anyway. Next email from Thomas Rodriguez, who says, "Hey there, I want to win that collection because I am a new streamer in Twitch, and every help is welcome. Obviously, I'm a little streamer, but I have fun in every stream. Cheers, only another kid. Budding streamer wants games to stream."
I can understand that.
Very true. Next is from Jesse Broadwater, who says, "Why do I want to win these games? Why does anyone want to win anything? Because it would bring brightness to a world of shit at the moment. Actually, it's video games, so it's not that drastic, but would be awesome to add some stuff to my library. World of shit."
Definitely a fun email.
That is a very realistic entry. Next email from Agbavna, who says, "Holy shit, that's a lot of games right there. Why do I want to win this collection? Let's see. I want to be all alone, but somehow manage to attract a whole range of other shapes to hang out with me. I want to swap my consciousness to my clones and see if this soul thing really exists. I want to blow the crap out of aliens and save those nerdy scientists. I want to be an action hero sliding on my arse whilst other action heroes watch me pass by. I want to do some cool tricks on a skateboard, but end up smashing my head on the pavement. I want to see how smart my clones would be trying to solve puzzles. I want to be the best ninja this world has ever seen, even if for only just 10 seconds. I want to change the colors on the screen just to see how pretty they are and hopefully save my missing mother. I want to dodge balls like a pro and shove the balls up the devil's beep." You said arse earlier. You could have said ass there, too. "If you want to see me do all those things, you know where to find me. Thanks for the chance. Wants to do it all." And final email from Frank Gonzalez, also known as Zylo, who says, "FYI, too late. Might not want to reveal my identity until the end, unless you already did. So let me be honest, who wouldn't want this indie bundle? It's a collection of some great indie titles, two of which I already own, easily worth the full price. But let's talk as to why I really want it. The following person, who is pictured below, seems to want me to enter, but to be picked to win and then be withdrawn from winning the prize. I believe this person has some sort of mental issue and should seek immediate medical attention. Nonetheless, I would like to see him get proven wrong and have him get salty by you giving me the prize. And then there's a picture of you."
Yeah.
"Or your Xbox avatar."
Yeah.
"Greatly appreciate the time and the opportunity. Thanks."
I'll just write Zylo so that I know for sure who wrote that one.
"Wants to piss off CJ."
Or I honestly don't care. I'm just making a joke because of the in-game stream.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Those are our 10 entries, and we've only got 2 codes to give away.
Well, you know who wins one for sure.
Who?
Aroto.
With the poem?
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
That was definitely a nice creative one.
I like creativity. So Aroto gets one. And then we have Raheel, who wants to earn some achievements or maybe even do his own giveaway. Souza, who got to have a code and never wins anything. Brian, who loves indies. Leon, who wants to see more bundles like this. Catherine, who has a bleeding knee, a hammer cunt, and no Xbox. Thomas, who is a budding streamer who wants games to stream. Jesse, who wants some joy in a world of shit. Ag, who gave us reasons why they want to play every game in the pack. And then Frank, who wants to piss you off.
There's 3 people that I like left over. So which tell 3? Me if you agree with on these. Thomas, because I can understand the ploy. Or, well, not the ploy, because that makes it sound evil.
I can understand a scam.
Ag, because it was also a nice little creative write-up. And then I want Zylo to win so that he... I can prove him wrong.
I was torn between Jesse, who wants some joy in a world of shit, and Ag. So since we both voted for Ag... Sounds like Ag is the other winner. So congrats to Aroto and Ag, who seem to win a lot of our contests.
Well, that's fair. They're very active viewers.
Yeah. And hey, if you all takes is the best entry. We don't care who you are. unless you're Sousa.
Yeah, exactly. Sousa's won plenty of her stuff too.
I'd never win. Jesus, Sousa.
Such a liar.
Congrats to our two winners, and thank you to everybody else for entering. We will have more contests in the future. We always do. So,
yeah.
Doc Havoc hanging out in the Twitch side. I wasn't even paying attention to Twitch. But saying, I think anyone who scares children should get a free win or an honorable mention. So, yes, Hammer Cunt gets an honorable mention for scaring children. Let's move on to some news. Big news of the week is that Games for Gold for March were announced. Some good stuff there. Xbox 360 for the beginning of the month will be getting Borderlands 2.
Ooh, yes.
Which confirms it is a game with gold title eventually, which we'll talk
about. What are you talking about? Confirmed it's a game with gold title eventually? What?
We didn't get to the games or the backward compatibility announcements yet.
Yeah, but that's just a confusing sentence.
I know. By eventually, I mean in about 3 minutes.
But you said games with gold. You
didn't say backward compatible. God damn it. Dude, I'm half asleep. Very active users. Carnage, you bastard. And then March 16th through the 31st will be Heavy Weapon, which is a PopCap game and already in the EA Access Vault, so waste.
Waste? I mean, for you.
It seems like a wasted slot. I don't know. Anyway, for all of March, everybody will be able to get Layers of Fear, which awesome game. We've had them on the show before. Really, really cool stuff. It'll be cool to see everyone get a chance to play that. And then, you know, for St. Paddy's Day, why not go with some horror?
Yeah.
And then why not stick with the horror-ish theme and get some monsters involved? Is March 16th through April 15th. CJ, you'll be excited. Evolve is free.
Not only just Evolve, but it's the Ultimate Edition that comes with every DLC. Yep. God fucking damn it. I just finished that game in January.
Hey, I just ordered it from the UK. So.
Yeah, but you got a collector's edition.
I did. And I think
I don't care, though.
I think I may have gotten my money back for it because the package went missing and I contacted them about it and they're like, well, can't find it. So here's your money back. Do you want to reorder it? I'm like, I guess, but it was out of stock, so I couldn't.
Oh.
And then it showed up like a week later. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, actually, weirdly enough, obviously, I'm really excited about Borderlands 2. I already own it and all DLC, but that finally means it's going to be backwards compatible.
Mm-hmm. I think.
And then Layers of Fear, because I don't like horror games, but I think I'm going to give that one a shot because I've been watching them lately and enjoying them. And this one doesn't seem too intense. Like, there's some scares, but it's like
they're not jump scares. They're like creep you out scares.
Yeah, I think I'd rather go with that. Yeah. Jump scares that's why I don't like horror games, is because I don't like jump scares. I find them annoying.
Anyways.
And then I can kind of agree with Heavy Weapon just being like,
that's just it's such there, a bummer for me.
But the other three games are so good that, well, sorta. Like, Evolve's not good, but it's like, it's a good title.
It's a $50 value.
Yeah.
Because you're getting all the DLC.
The other three titles are pretty good, and Heavy Weapon can be excused for that. It's like, you gotta have one game that's not really huge.
It's an overall solid lineup.
Yeah, so. Definitely a good month.
Let's see what Sony brings out probably in the next week or two. We'll hear from theirs. But since we mentioned Borderlands and backward compatibility, I guess they'll just go ahead and announce that as backward compatibility program today. They actually they had a truckload of six titles where before today they had, what, three in the past 2 weeks, and they had six today. So we got Borderlands 2, which I'm not sure what the story with this game is because the game download is like 14 gigs.
I know I own all the DLC and I went to download that stuff. The DLC is significantly smaller. I think all the DLC is put in the game. You have to use unlocks.
I know. I'm not sure how it works. Because I know with the first Borderlands, they gave all the DLC for free.
And I don't know why. That was listed as a glitch on the Microsoft site that they're just not going to fix. Like, I don't think that they intentionally did it. But I'm wondering if that's going to be the same case with the second Borderlands or if they're going to not go with that. I mean, it would be a shame if it was a glitch, because I just recently bought the season pass when it was on sale.
So yeah, I don't know if it's, you know, if the DLC's included or if it's just included in the game download as a compatibility thing, which is also probably very possible.
You don't have to download the compatibility pack, so that's probably the case.
But anyway, Borderlands 2 is now playable on the Xbox One, as well as the King of Fighters 2002 Unlimited March, which, funny enough, is the only game out of these six I don't own.
Did you just say March?
Unlimited March. Is it Match?
Yes, it's Match.
Yay, typos. Ha ha. King of Fighters 2002 Unlimited Match in March. Space Invaders Infinity Gene. Moondiver. Gyromancer. And I think the biggest one of the week, Assassin's Creed Rogue.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one, because a lot of people just didn't pick it up because it was the 360 exclusive and PS3 exclusive that released after the Xbox One was already out.
Yeah, it was released same time as Unity, and everybody hated Unity and figured Rogue was a bomb as well. And everyone's saying Rogue is like one of the best since Black Flag.
Yeah, like I've heard very good things about Rogue, and I'm actually interested to try it out now that it's backwards compatible. Like, I don't know. I'm more excited about Borderlands 2 because Borderlands 2 is in my top five favorites of all time.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a nice one as well.
And if you like free games, there's some good free game news for everybody. On March 1st, Final Fantasy 15, A King's Tale, previously available as the GameStop pre-order bonus, will release to everybody for free.
Yeah, I saw that. It was interesting. I didn't expect that.
I didn't expect it either. I thought they were going to sell it for like $5-$10, but yeah, that's cool as hell that they're not just releasing it, but they're doing it for free.
I've seen a lot of people that are a little annoyed about it, though, because they pre-ordered the GameStop just for that. And now there's not really a point, but get over it.
Yeah, whatever. It's been months.
Yeah,
been like
exactly.
3.5 months, 4 months. I'm more enjoying the fact of the people who would pay like $40-$50 for it on eBay.
Yeah, and now it's going to be free, and these people paid way too much for it.
See, they should have done the smart thing and, you know, pre-ordered it at GameStop and picked it up and then returned the game like 2 days later.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
wow. And as long as it remains unopened, isn't it returnable for full?
Yeah, it's just like a normal game. You just don't open it.
Yeah.
It's that easy. Buy it somewhere else and open that one.
Oh, is the code printed on the receipt?
Yep.
Instead of, okay.
Yep.
Because I know some pre-order bonuses are inside the thing and you have to open it.
The other news I have is that Sony has been very specific in stating that the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy will launch June 30th and be coming to PS4 and PS Pro 4 first.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff about this.
So it is looking like the Insane Trilogy will not be a Sony exclusive, which I've been saying for a while. And the main reason, because Activision wants money.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it'll be like 6 months or maybe a year exclusive, but I am absolutely not at all shocked that it's not a full exclusive.
Hopefully that means sometime soon Xbox One gets it. Yeah. I'd like to play those games.
And this will mark the first time that the first three Crash games will be playable somewhere else. And people are like, oh, well, they can't do that. They, you know, Sony owns the publishing rights to them. Okay, but if they're remade, they don't own the rights to, like, the level design. They own the rights to the original trilogy.
Yep. Activision has the publishing rights of the remasters. Yeah.
And even just because someone publishes a game, it doesn't really mean anything anymore. Look at the original Mass Effect. That was published by Microsoft. Funded and published by Microsoft.
Yep, that's right.
That went elsewhere.
It did diddly do that.
Yeah. And then some Nintendo news, because the Switch is right around the corner. There will apparently be a day one update for the system, which will enable all of the online features like social media connectivity and the eShop. But it was confirmed there will not be a virtual console at release. which is kind of a bummer for people who like the classic stuff, but we're all going to be playing Zelda anyway.
Yeah, the first couple months don't matter.
The Switch has lost a launch title.
Really?
Binding of Isaac Afterbirth is no longer planned for the launch, but it is still scheduled for March, so it's looking like mid-March it'll be coming. So it's not a big delay, it's just a slight bump. But to make up for it, two new games have been promoted to launch day. Fast RMX, which is a fast racing Neo on the Wii U, F-Zero style game, you know, remade, remixed, whatever. And Shovel Knight with the Spectre Knight campaign.
Oh, cool. So one indie game for another.
Yeah. So that should be pretty awesome. But yeah, that's all the news I got.
I don't got anything.
Nothing else?
Nope. No news that I can think of that is important enough to talk about.
Cool. So let's dive right into our reviews then. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
We're going to start things off with, I guess, a joint review for the two of us. Zombie Vikings, developed and published by Zoink Games, released February 22nd on the Xbox One for $11.99 after a long, long wait. From the creators of the indie smash hit Stick It to the Man comes a new 1-4 player co-op stab-you-in-the-gut-a-thon. Embark on a dead-funny adventure with the zombie Vikings, a putrid posse sent on a mission through the most epic of worlds to retrieve Odin's lost eye. CJ, you start this off since I've been talking a lot and I need a drink.
Motherfucker. Of course you would, because I didn't even know that we were doing this today and I didn't write up it.
Gotcha, okay, bitch.
Yeah.
Hey, I gotta get you into doing more reviews where you're just talking about them instead of reading.
I don't like doing that because I forget shit and then I feel nervous and then I forget more shit.
Yeah, that's why you just talk and see what happens.
Well, Zombie Vikings started off really funny. They had a great opening cutscene. It's an action beat 'em up, so it's kind of like Castle Crashers, really. It's like Castle Crashers. But, you know, instead of everybody being knights, you're undead Vikings. Also known as zombies. I love the game so far, and I didn't get to play it as much as you did. I saw that you were actually playing it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I was dabbling in it a bit more.
But from what I've seen that so far, I really like the game. There's a few different characters you can play, like a little hedgehog guy that's really quick, but not as powerful, which you were playing a lot of. And
he's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he's insane. He's like, ha, 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 ha. He's like some kind of weird fucking gremlin. And then you got
they have a squid man, an octopus man, where it's a body, an undead body controlled by a mini little octopus.
Yeah, that guy's funny, and his like charged Y attack is hilarious. He just shoots out an octopus that goes like blah, blah, blah,
and giant
hits
tentacles.
Everything. It's just like one of those weird tentacle porns. But anyway, and then you got the big buff chick that I was playing, because she's basically like the tank. She's super strong, and her melee attacks do a lot of damage, but she's also a little bit slower. Like she can't attack as quickly. And her charged Y attack is a fucking suicide bomb.
Yeah.
Great. It hurts you a lot, but it hurts the enemy a lot too.
Hurts them a lot more.
And then I know there's a fourth character.
The pigtail girl who was like raised by crows.
Yeah, I don't know too much about her though. Like
I haven't used her much.
I don't think either of us really touched her.
I dabbled with the squid dude and the hedgehog guy. I don't remember any of the names because I'm bad. Hedgie,
yes, right. Hedgie was one of them because that name's very simple. It was easy to remember.
Yeah, I remember reviewing this. This is one of our earlier reviews that we did on PS4. I think before we were even doing like buy it, try it, deny it. You know, it's very standard 4-player brawl 'em up. I like the fact that you can hit the B button and like stab your friends and carry them around.
Yeah, that's hilarious as well. I loved when you just picked me up and I was just like, holy shit, you can do this? It's the first time you did that.
You're just attacking as I'm carrying you.
And I can't get down until you let me down. This is the funny part.
Yeah, like, each I'm of the stages has like side quests and mini missions and tons of equipment to unlock. I fucking love this game. I've been bugging Zoink since it came out on the PS4. if it was coming to Xbox, and it finally came, and I'm thrilled about it. I know, my personal recommendation, as it was on the PS4, is a buy it for $12. The amount of fun that you can have with this game with your friends, and clearly it is better with friends.
Yeah, obviously. This is going to be a game that you want to have. You want to convince your friends to drop the money.
Yeah, and best of all, it's not just local co-op.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the big thing.
4-player online co-op.
My only complaint about the online co-op is that there's no way to find people outside of like having them as your friend. Like, you can't just search for people.
Yeah.
I do wish that you could just find random people if you wanted to.
Hey,
but other than that, it's a lot of fun. I like it.
I say this about the people complaining that Rock Band 4 doesn't have matchmaking. I would prefer friend invites than no online at all.
Exactly. At least you can still play it. And you can always go online and try to find people on, like, forums and stuff.
And
or on
this
Twitter.
This is probably a game I would prefer to play with friends anyway. Like, playing with strangers... This is a game that is going to get you so many communication bans if you were playing with strangers.
Yeah, I mean, you can
like,
get...
You lose the duel, it's like, you fucking piece of shit, god damn it. And they don't know that you're joking, but your friends, they know, kind of. Maybe.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That duel
that fucking
way
duel,
too long.
Oh, god.
You just spamming the same stupid move with Hedgie, and
I could do.
I eventually killed you, but you almost killed me. Like, you went from, I had like a half bar and you were almost dead to like, you pushed me the whole way down to what level, what you had. And then I finally figured out, like, you know, a good idea was to press Y and she has a grappling hook and she just pulled herself towards you and then started smacking you. And I was like, okay, there we go. And I finally won. And you get that weapon for free if you win the duel. The other person can have the weapon, but they have to pay gold for it, which you get by breaking open chests and stuff. And then we eventually just went in and I let you win the duel so that you could have the item too for free. Because, I mean,
that's
good
so
friends
sweet
do that.
Of you. So, yeah, I give it a buy it. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I definitely said a lot of thoughts already.
I mean, your rating. What is your dick?
I didn't know that it was $12.99. I thought it was $19.99. So that's a surprise to me. Definitely.
My notes have it at $12.99. I could double check.
I know that's how much it is on Steam. I thought it was more expensive on Xbox, but I might be wrong. So,
well, I will jump on and double check now. Zombie Vikings. Hey, Caps Lock is on for my cat stepping on my keyboard again.
How nice. No, it's $11.99. I'm stupid. Okay, yeah, at $11.99, absolutely buy this game. Like, why wouldn't you? These guys did Stick It to the Man, which is also hilarious. Like, this is just... And the art style of these games, I love their art style that they do with the, like exaggerated characters and stuff that are just great.
Just the humor in this game is so ridiculously stupid. I love it.
Oh, for some reason, I just remembered all four characters' names.
And they are? You might as well tell us.
Yeah, the big... chick is Gunborg, the octopus dude is Seaguard, Hedgie obviously, and then the Raven chick is Kakaw. I totally did get that from the store page. I remembered it all.
David Bruno, holy shit, you have a Pepsi Clear? It's Crystal Pepsi. Gotta get
dude,
the name right.
Come on. Clear, really?
Crystal Pepsi. Yes, they brought it back to stores once again. So hopefully that'd be cool if it sticks around so that it could join another 90s staple, Surge.
Yay.
Those are like 90s. My podcast drinks when I have them, Crystal Pepsi and Surge.
I should have gotten a podcast drink, but I didn't.
Got to get my 90s on. All right, next game to talk about is called East Origins, developed by Nihon Falcom, published by Dotemu. It released February 21st on the PS4 for $19.99, with a Vita release coming later this spring. It was supposed to come at the same time, but I guess it got delayed a bit. The perfect mix of action, exploration, and story with screen-filling bosses, unique platforming elements, and innovative puzzles. When it comes to RPGs, we always got to get our friend Chris Taylor involved. So, Chris, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, doing great. How are y'all doing?
Yeah, yeah.
We already answered that earlier on the show.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, whoops. I'm not supposed to answer that question.
That's how we start every show. Come on, Chris.
Oh, I see.
I hope that we ask that at the beginning of the show. Or it's gonna be
I'm going to make sure to not ask that at the beginning of the show.
See, there you go.
Editing.
You're like, oh yeah, I forgot to ask how everyone was doing.
CJ, how are you doing? It was horrible.
Oh, I'm not great. Joking.
Oh no. Sorry.
We'll find out about that earlier.
We will have found out about that earlier.
Oh,
back to the future.
Oh man. So yes. East Origins, Chris, you covered this one for us. I am incredibly jealous because I want this game so bad, but I know I just didn't have the time to do it justice. Where you live and die for these kind of RPGs. So what are your thoughts?
Oh man, Ease Origin. Well, thank you for sending it my way, because Ease is actually one of my favorite series. I would dare say probably my favorite in terms of action RPGs that are like that strict hybrid blend. In fact, Ease 3, Wanderers from Ease, is the first game I ever rented for the Super Nintendo.
About a week after I got.
So I go way back with this series. And speaking of going way back...
How did you pronounce it at the time?
Y-S.
Wanderers from Y-S. Wanderers from Yes.
Yeah, I just thought it was an acronym. I didn't know.
None of us knew.
Yeah, none of us knew until... I'm sure people knew before, but I didn't find out until Ark of Napishtim.
Fantastic name that the East franchise loves to use.
At least it can kind of be done phonetically, because you're like Nap-ish-tim.
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 So, what's Origins about?
Well, speaking of going way back, Origin is an Ease game that goes way back to 700 years before the first adventure of Adol, the series' perennial protagonist. Mm-hmm. I had to load that one up in my brain.
Sounded like you were about to say Adolf, and I was like, what? Where's this game going?
It's Adolf, but the first four
no
letters.
F. No F.
No F. No PH. Or F. I don't know. It's one. Whatever. I think both spellings are fine. Yeah. So, if you've ever played Ease 1, Ancient Ease Vanished, or the more recent retellings in Ease Book 1 and 2, those both deal with with this really tall tower of demons that you must traverse for most of the game. It's not all the game, but it's a good chunk of it. And of course there's different elements to the lore, such as the Black Pearl, Twin Goddesses, things like that. And you basically get to sort of learn about them in the first Ease game, but in Origin, you're actually dealing with the stories directly. So, as far as I know, it's basically the world of Ease is in trouble, and there's some goddesses that are supposed to help, but then they go missing. Either of the two heroes that you select wakes up next to a tree, and the tree tells them very kindly that the goddesses were last seen near the giant tower of demons. And so you go to join your search group and try to find them. And along the way, you sort of figure out that there are other insidious forces involved. And the whole story kind of unfolds as you progress through the dungeon. And so basically, the interesting thing about this story, apart from that it explains the history a little bit more directly in that you get to live it, it also has two different characters, neither of which is Adol Kristen. So,
ooh.
Ooh. It would be weird if he was there. And
time traveling.
Weirder still, he actually is, but we'll get to that.
What?
Yeah. So, you basically have your choice on the onset between two characters, kind of like Star Ocean 2 or Sword of Mana. I mean, there's a lot of games that have the guy and the girl. The girl is actually more the default character. Her name is Unica, and she plays exactly like Adol. So she's the one to pick if you want to get the familiarity there. And this game is built on the engine of Oath and Fel'Ghana and what's the other one? Ark of Napishtim, which I just mentioned. So it basically plays exactly like those games as far as the running, jumping, doing insane combos with your sword or axe. Yuniko uses an axe, but she gets a sword too. So your acrobatic, like, mid-air 12-hit combos are lovingly retained for this chapter. and it's super fun. The other character is... his name is Hugo Fact, from the Fact family.
Interesting. And,
yes. And while I was playing just fine with Unica for the first part of the game in order to get a good... you know, playing experience for a review, I decided to start all over again with Hugo after a while. And the fun thing I learned about Hugo is that he's the wizard type, which I was hesitant because I was like, I don't know, magic is kind of lame in the E series that I know. It's just kind of a peppering of attacks that you add to the 12 hit aerial sword combos. It's like, you know, you start with this, with the sword and then end up with using a spell or something. So what they did for this character actually made the game like twice as good as any Ys game I've played.
Wow.
He has these two orbs to his sides called the Eyes of Fact. And yes, they're called Eyes, not Ys. And when you use your regular attack, he swings his wand and the two eyes, or he swings his wand and the two eyes at the same time, all three shoot beams. So you basically get a shooter as a character.
Interesting.
Yes.
And this is from a series that started off where your battles, you just walked into the opponent.
Yes. In the original Ys 1 Vanished Omens and in Ys 2, the combat, well, these were for the old ass, like, PC 88 systems in Japan,
yeah,
which didn't have much in the way of, like, an interface or, like, in the way of, like, engines and stuff, because these are, like, practically pre-NES sort of games. So, yeah, commonly, you would have a swordman that instead of swinging your sword, you just run into the enemy and it calculates the damage based on that. And, which actually is, something they've retained in games like Faerun, the two 3DS download games. Those are actually games that bring back the whole running into enemies until one of you dies, which I found delightful. Anyway, but yeah, it went from that into a wizard character that is basically a fighter ship, and you just take out enemies from a distance and, you know, just totally blast them. And of course, that is... He also gets some interesting like spells and ways that you can utilize that, but it provides this whole different way of dealing with everything from like boss battles to even platforming is slightly different with this character. So that was probably the most impressive element to this game versus something like Oath and Felghana or Ark of Napishtim, that, you know, it kind of does just sort of builds on more of the same.
Yeah,
so I was pretty impressed by that. So yeah, I did some reading ahead after I played a few hours with Hugo, and it turns out you actually get a third character along the way who is simply known as the Claw. But apparently, yeah,
is he a doctor? Could he be a doctor, Dr. Claw?
I hope so.
I'll get you, Adol.
That's a very good impression. I can't do that impression without destroying my voice. So the Claw does show up pretty early in the game, and apparently you recruit him later, and his actual identity is something of an Ys series like spoiler, if you know what it is. So apparently there's some mystery to this character that has to do with other chapters in the story, so I don't know what that's about. I'm looking forward to finding out. And on top of that, the game doesn't stop there. Along with your main adventure, which you get to see really uniquely through two different sets of eyes, they treat the characters very differently from each other, which is kind of cool. Like, I'm already seeing like boss battles change depending on the characters because of storyline interactions. It's kind of great.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So you also, I guess at the end of the game, get a boss rush and a time attack mode where you can sort of challenge yourself even more. Apart from the game's, like I said, it's got two main characters and I think three difficulty levels. So wow. That's a lot of game. And this is a spoiler unless you read anything that has ever talked about E's origin, including Wikipedia. But in the boss attack and time attack modes, you can play as Adol. For no reason at all.
Yeah, why not? It's a fun added character. So
yeah, let's throw him in.
How does it stack up to the Vita version of Memories of Salsetta or Salketta or Calcetta or however you say it?
I don't.
That's a good way to go about that.
Because that's actually one of my favorite East titles. It just seemed to really strike a nerve with me. And, you know, the PSP ones were okay, but I never really got into them. But the Vita Memories title was fantastic, I thought. So how does this stack up?
I wish I could say, but I don't have a Vita, so I haven't actually played it yet.
Oh, wow. You never played that one?
I've played the game it's based on, which is Ys 4, of course, which came out as two different games, as if Ys wasn't confusing enough already. But no, I haven't played the Vita one, so I'll have that's one if not the like reasons that I really want one.
Yeah, Vita for an RPG fan like you kind of need a Vita.
Yeah, I know.
And they're getting cheap enough now.
Hopefully.
Plus all the PSP games you could play on it as well. Not
for
all
sure,
of them,
yeah.
But a chunk of them.
Wow. Good chunk, yeah. And that's the cool thing about this game is that it's also coming out for the Vita. And really, I mean, if I had to take away any marks from this game, it does kind of have the look of a portable game that you're playing on a big TV. The graphics are really crisp and clear, and the frame rate is like really, really good. Everything's really smooth, but you'll notice in things like, let's say, cutscenes, you'll notice it like placing polygons onto the darkness as the camera travels. And things like that. And of course the sprites are really good looking, but also a fair bit lacking in detail. So this might not be the most impressive game for people with like a, you know, 50-inch screen that are playing this, even though it does have a, you know, apparently it's the widescreen mode has been improved from.
I mean, to be fair, East Origin originally released in Japan on Windows in 2006.
Exactly, yes.
And then it came to America in 2012 on Windows and Steam, and now it's hitting a console. So I guess you can't expect the greatest visuals, but it sounds like they did spruce it up a bit for the jump to PlayStation 4.
Yes. For that reason, I think that it's perfect as a $20 download, because you're getting a ton of stuff from it. The story is incredible. The translation's great. You know, the music, of course, is fantastic, because that's one of the things Ys is known best for.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't remember if I researched this properly, but I think they got the composer from like most of the later games. So it definitely has that sound.
All right. Like so give us the bottom line. What's your verdict?
Okay, so as somebody who has never ever paid more than like $10 or $12 for a download, I would say it's worth the $20. Definitely go get it, because if you're a fan of Ys, it builds on the world that has been, you know, that's been there for almost 30 years now. It has some great stuff that the other games don't have. Like I said, Hugo is probably my favorite new addition. Even though he's kind of a dork. Well, he's played off as like this, you know, badass son of a really important person. And so he's very arrogant. And the game has yet, in my experience, to really cut him down to size or anything. So really, you're just kind of going around with everybody being impressed by you. And if you find that insufferable, then I don't know what the story ultimately does with him, but you know, I trust it to be pretty cool.
All right.
And he's super fun to play with. But yeah, this is a bottom line must buy if you're a fan of action RPGs and especially the Ys series.
Sounds good. I will be doing that later on tonight myself as soon as money hits accounts.
Yes.
So, Chris, thank you once again for handling this game for us, and I'm sure we'll see you back on here soon.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right, and thanks again to Chris for that, but we are going to move on now. The next game to talk about is called A Pixel Story, developed by Lamplight Studios, published by David Bruno's friends at Rising Star Games, since he handled PR for Rising Star. That's kind of funny. This released February 24th on Xbox One and PS4, again for $11.99. A Pixel Story is a devious 2D puzzle platformer that charts the evolution of video games. You must use your magical teleportation hat to explore 6 increasingly detailed zones on your quest to reach the core of the system to stop the evil OS and save the world.
That sounds cool already.
This game is pretty baller, but pretty difficult. And baller could be literal, since you start the game, like when you start, your character is the ball in Pong.
Ah.
Cool. Yeah, the opening cutscene is you being abducted and then given a body, and then the platforming begins. It starts simple enough with just walking, climbing platforms, going off bumpers, avoiding spikes and, you know, saws and all this other stuff. There's no enemies, so like the only deaths happening are going to be environmental deaths, which will happen a lot, like a hell of a lot.
Like a super ton amount.
Oh my god!
Would it be a metric fuck ton?
A metric, possibly. The metric fuck ton is mainly reserved for, they have challenge rooms. The campaign can be difficult, but it won't drive you completely insane because, you know, they want you to complete the campaign, which makes sense. Don't get me wrong; there are still some really difficult sections in the campaign that'll push your limits, but everything is at least solvable and beatable. They have coins that you collect through the stages, and you can use those coins to unlock challenge rooms, which are no checkpoints. It's just get through the room and collect the diamond at the end.
And sounds difficult.
Good fucking luck, because I have unlocked like 10 of them so far, and I have not beaten a single one.
Ouch. Sounds really hard.
Not a single goddamn one. They are insane. They are brutally, brutally difficult that will push your patience to the absolute limits. I got so goddamn close to the one, and there was just a drop where you have to drop down in between fireballs going in 2 different directions, and you got to drop down and then immediately start moving to the left. And I could not do it. I tried that single spot, I don't know, a dozen times, and I was just like, I'm not doing this. I can't do this anymore. I am going to hate this game if I continue doing this.
Yeah, that's definitely that's the negative side to hard games, is like, they can be good, but they can make you hate them.
But you know that there's people out there who are going to get all of them.
Exactly.
I can't wait for Jake, our good friend Jake's, to send us an email and be like, hey, yeah, I got my 1,000. Suck it, bitches.
You know, he's been a little weak lately, though, I noticed. He hasn't been completing those games anymore.
Might be busy. You never know.
Or just weak.
Visuals in the game are really, really cool, because it starts out in, you know, Pong 4-bit style. And then you get abducted. You know, the ball gets abducted and, you know, it has these lush graphics where you're given the body and then you're sent to the first world, which is an 8-bit style. You know, you continue on, you get through to a second area, still an 8-bit style, and then you have to go through a generational jump, which boosts you up to 16-bit world.
Oh, that's cool.
So the visuals evolve as you go through the game. And it's a really cool twist to see how your character, the details and everything else, goes from like simple pixely visuals. Even the music progresses through the game. It's a really, really awesome game, but it is, holy shit, can it get hard? Especially those challenge rooms, Jesus. Like, my blood pressure's going up just thinking about some of these challenge rooms.
I was going to say, like, some of the screenshots look drastically different from others, yeah. And that explains why.
Yeah, the whole evolving visuals through the game is a really cool twist. And that's why it says, you know, you go through the evolution of video games. The game has a good sense of humor to it. It has great control mechanics, lots of different twists with how you use the magical hat to, you know, you first get it and you put your hat down to like and then walk to a switch and you hit the switch and use the X button to warp back to your hat.
Oh, cool.
Or the Y button to warp back. I think it's X to put it down and Y to warp back. And you have to, you know, you figure out how to place it down and do stuff and close walls and everything else and teleport. And then you eventually learn that your hat also carries momentum as well. So if you put your hat somewhere and you hit a bumper and switch back, whatever momentum you were going in continues on.
Oh, cool.
So it's pretty tough. It's a lot of cool, unique mechanics in the game, difficult game, good-looking game. This was the game last week I mentioned where I had an issue where I played it for about 3 hours, went back to the game later, and my progress was gone. I have not had that happen again, so I'm thinking that might have been an issue when Xbox Live was having problems.
Possibly.
So, but I did want to mention, this is the game it happened on, but again, it has not happened since. So I'm chalking that up to just something fucky going on. As it stands, $11.99, really good price. It's a hearty recommendation, but due to the difficulty, not everyone is going to enjoy it. If you're a completionist, you might want to stay away. Everyone else, if you're looking for just a good, fun, story-based platformer, it's worth grabbing.
Okay, cool.
Next game is called Riptide GP Renegade, developed and published by Vector Unit, released February 24th, finally, on the Xbox One and Windows 10 for $9.99, and it is a Play Anywhere title, meaning you get it on both. Experience a future of illicit hydrojet racing where armored riders kick out of death-defying stunts over massive waterfalls, dodge cops, and boost across surging waves. Unlock new vehicles, characters, and customization features as you take down bosses and build your crew in career mode. I covered this one back on the PS4 a few months back, so CJ, this one is all yours.
I gotta clear my throat. All right, Riptide GP Renegade is a racing game in which you race hydro jets on water, obviously.
What?
The game is insanely fun and addicting. I'm really enjoying it. There's a moderately length career mode, which has some decent writing and an enjoyable story. There are four events, a normal race, freestyle, which is all about doing tricks to gain points, and slalom. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Slalom?
Slalom, okay. Which is about hitting checkpoints on the track. And
Shlomalom.
Salom is what I said. Thank you.
Shlomalom.
Which is... It's really, really making it easy. and elimination mode, which is your standard race, but every 15 seconds, the person in last place gets eliminated. The trick system is a lot of fun and different from most racing games with tricks. In order to perform a trick, you must push both the left and right stick in a direction. Like if you were to push both to the left and right, perhaps you'll do a backflip, or if you push them both left or both right, you'll do a can-can. On top of these tricks, there are, as you level up, you gain skill points, which can be used to unlock more advanced tricks, which gives you more boost when performed. For example, if you hold both sticks up and then both sticks apart twice, you will perform a log roll, which is really interesting.
I love some of the tricks in the game. They're such ridiculous tricks.
Yeah, the log roll was definitely a weird one. I couldn't imagine that actually being pulled off in any real way. Like, that's just insane to me. Like I said, the gameplay is super addicting. I didn't want to put down this game because I was enjoying it so much. It is a miracle that I managed to find time to actually play my other review games this week. I really, really like this. The graphics are also very good, and while not too realistic, which doesn't really seem to be the goal, the game looks really cool due to the futuristic style. This also shows in the tracks, which are all unique and look awesome. There may not be very many tracks, but the ones that are there look awesome. I particularly like the track The Ruins, which is a flooded city during a storm. You can get huge air off the waves, and the track just looks insane. I couldn't find a single thing to complain about with this game. Honestly, I like the entire game for what it is, and for $10, like, I easily could have seen this being a $20 game. $10?
I know, even when Matt Small of Vector Unit was on in the past, which, by the way, he'll be here in like 2 or 3 weeks, something like that, I asked him how they got such a good-looking game in such a small file size.
Yeah, it's 400 megs.
The game is fucking gorgeous, and the water physics?
The whole game is just almost, I go as far as to say, perfect for what it has in it.
It's voodoo magic that they got such a good-looking game in such a small file size. I don't understand it at all.
They are some technical geniuses over there, and $9.99, it's an absolute buy it. Like, there's no other rating this game could get.
Especially because you also get it on Windows 10 as well.
Yeah, they went all out, and only $9.99 feels like the kind of game that's like you're stealing from the devs at this point.
Yeah, their first Riptide GP2 on Xbox was really good. Beach Buggy Racing was a lot of fun. Renegade, they just raised the bar in every way.
I want to play GP2 now just because I like this one so much. I'm going to finish this game and actually get all the achievements. That's another thing. The achievement hunters will probably want to get this. It's not too difficult depending on the difficulty you play on. I liked it even on easy. It made it feel like you could lose, but it wasn't like so annoying. It wasn't, you know, difficult.
Yeah.
I'm somebody that's like, I like racing games, but I'm the kind of person that likes racing games where I know I'm going to win.
Yeah. And something else to keep in mind, because I believe he revealed this last time he was on. If you haven't figured it out yet, there is a big head mode code in the game that at the title screen, make sure you use the analog stick because it didn't work for me on the D-pad, but up, up, down, down, left, right, and X. Or no, A. I'm still thinking of PlayStation. Up, up, down, down, left, right, A. If you hear a sound effect, you did it right, and everyone has big heads.
That's why I fucked that up. I was trying to do it, but I was like up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A. That's what I did.
Yeah, it's just A.
Damn it. That's why I couldn't get the big head mode to work.
Believe it or not, big head mode actually makes it more difficult because those heads are huge. They block a lot of your view.
I imagine. It'd probably be pretty funny, though.
But, yeah, I fully agree that this gets a buy it. It is such an awesome, awesome game. I'm so happy it's on Xbox. It was a long wait. Not as long as Zombie Vikings, but it's cool to see in the same week two games that PlayStation gamers have got to enjoy for a while make the jump over to Xbox, and they're both worth the wait.
We should really get a new level that's higher than buy it for these kind of games.
Fucking buy it? I don't know.
godlike.
It's just emphasis of buy it. I don't think we need a new level because it's still buy it, but it's like the different levels of try it that we have. Like it's a hearty recommendation or it's a hesitant try it.
Yeah, this one's like if you don't buy this, you shouldn't live.
It's a fucking buy it. You gotta fucking buy it. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Forma 8, developed and published by Mixed Bag Games. It releases February 24th on Xbox One, PS4, and is available now on Steam. It just released today, the 23rd, for $14.99. Forma 8 is a unique take on the proven Metroidvania action-adventure formula with a striking visual style and huge worlds to explore. This plays a lot like Song of the Deep, where you are a ship flying around in space, but control-wise, it's very similar to, like, your submarine going underwater. Visual style reminds me a lot of a more colorful Limbo style, where it has, like, you know, lots of stark, solid colors everywhere. It works really well. Beautiful game. Ambient style music. Gameplay is flying around Metroidvania style. You land on this planet and there's a flashing icon on your map that you have to get to. And that's basically the story. Get to that glowing area on the map, and then you have to explore. There is so much exploration in this game, possibly to a fault. There's a lot of times where I would go, because your basic instinct when you see that glowing dot is, I got to try to get there through the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
But you'll find it's blocked off, or you'll find that you need different abilities to get through there, and you can't, you know, you don't have them yet. So you have to backtrack and find out where you had to go to get that ability. And, you know, you can make all these different wrong turns. There is an insane amount of backtracking in this game that I think could have been maintained a bit with a little bit of extra guidance on areas that you should try getting to, instead of just having, like, one glowing area of, like, I have to eventually get there. Because, you know, Metroidvanias are all about exploring and checking out different areas and whatnot, but it should be at your leisure, not out of frustration of, I have to backtrack and go through this area again. Something that doesn't help is, I wish this ship moved a little bit faster. Like, it doesn't have to... It's not... It's just a little bit slower than I wish it was. Like, it's not in that area where it's, oh my god, this is way too slow, or it's like, oh, this is too fast, I can't control it. It's like that perfect speed dialed down 2.
Oh, okay.
Makes sense. I mean, I can understand it because the controls in the game, since you're flying around, they're very floaty. Like, you know, you could hold in a direction, let go, and you'll continue drifting in that direction for a decent amount. So there's, like, a lot of wide turns through some of the tighter corridors, which can make some of the little timed mini challenges tougher to accomplish, especially because you'll bounce off walls if you have a lot of momentum. So I can understand why the thing moves as slow as it does, but when you're in big expansive areas, I wish you could move faster. One of the upgrades that you get later in the game gives you you hit the Y button for a quick speed boost. But there's a slight recharge of like 2 seconds in between that you could use it. And I just wish there was more. I wish you could either use that more, or the general ship speed was a little bit faster. Just something. Just a smidge of balancing to work with the speed, or with the handling to make a faster speed a little bit easier to deal with.
Perhaps, like, maybe in combat, move that slow, but outside of combat, move quicker.
There's not, like, a lot of combat, because unlike a lot of Metroidvanias, you're not really shooting anything. You have, like, a close-range, kind of like a pulse attack that'll hit enemies and knock them away for you, which you could use to eventually kill them. You eventually also get a mine that you can lay down, and enemies could either run into it, or they'll be near it and it'll explode. Or the closest thing that there is to shooting, at least since that I've gotten to, there might be something else further in the game. You can drop a mine and then use your pulse attack to shoot it away from you, which you have to use to kill some enemies. It can be a bit too precise, but again, that comes with the whole drifting around in space kind of thing. And if you moved faster, it would make it even harder. So again, I can understand the need to have it move the speed that it does. There's just times where I wish you moved faster.
Well, that's a very valid complaint.
Yeah. Overall, a really, really cool game. Beautiful visuals. Lots to do. Lots to explore. Between the movement speed not being just enough and a lot of unnecessary backtracking, best I could do is give this a solid try. It's a lot of fun, but it's just missing that tiny little bit of, I guess, further polish or further tuning to push it into a buy it. But for $15, it's really cool.
Okay.
The shoot dog saying vaccine, don't forget. We're actually not covering that one today. That'll be on our show early next week, because Eternal, our reviewer for that, was unable to join us today.
That's a shame. It's fun when she's on. Hopefully next week.
But we will be covering that one, so no worries there. Boko Suka, we unfortunately did not get. Although Carnage fucking
it makes it
hates
seem like
it.
It's not unfortunate.
Carnage hates that game. I think it looks interesting. So, next game to talk about is called Boar, developed by Dazlog Studios, published by our friends at Badland Games. Released February 14th on Steam for only $4.99, Boar is a 2D puzzle platformer game where you play as a girl with the ability to multiply herself. Stranded on Eden, a beautiful but strange world full of challenging puzzles with platforming elements and a refreshing gameplay. CJ, what did you think of this?
Okay, Boar is a puzzle platformer that doesn't really bring anything new to the table, but what it has works well. The gameplay is fun. You have to solve puzzles by using a clone of yourself to hit buttons and switches, as well as grab the attention of enemies, so that you can make it through each room. Some puzzles involve jumping over spikes and moving saw blades, and others have you using a clone to get an enemy to shoot you and the destructible behind it. You can have up to one clone at a time, and each clone will only live for about 10 seconds. However, there are pickups that will reset the timer on the clone. The best part about the clones is that they are basically fodder for you to just get past anything you need to. If a clone dies, it doesn't matter as long as you make it out alive. So as soon as it dies, you can just send out another clone. The clones are unimportant. They're just there to help you out. The platforming in Boar is good. The jumping is a bit floaty, but not so much that it's annoying. Plus, it's very easy to adjust yourself in midair. The boss fights are interesting, but can be a bit frustrating because you die in one hit. Mm. And if you mess up a boss fight, you will have to start from the beginning of the fight. There are no checkpoints. However, the boss fights aren't too long, so a checkpoint isn't necessary. It's just it makes it a little more unnerving because you want to make sure that you don't mess it up, especially if you mess it up a few times already. The style of the game looks great. It consists of a lot of white, red, and gray. The character design and the design of the robots also look awesome. However, the sound design I don't care for. The music is fine, but certain sound effects are louder. God fuck, my tongue is getting all tied.
God fuck.
I haven't had
any
water.
Blasphemous.
Oh well, I'll start from that sentence again because of my
I'm not editing. I'm not fixing that for you.
Oh, no, I don't care. I'm just saying I'm going to start the sentence again.
Well, come on.
The music is
waiting. What? Go.
Are you going to stop? The music is fine, but certain sound effects are louder than they should be and can be annoying. Especially the noise of the text appearing on screen is honestly agonizing and gave me an actual headache. Like, I legitimately got a headache from the noise that is made when text appears on screen and distracts from what the character is also saying. Luckily, the game doesn't progress dialogue until you press A, so after the noise finally stops, you can actually read it. I feel like if the noise wasn't so loud, it wouldn't be so annoying. But it's like, it's loud, but it's loud compared to everything else. It's not like I can just turn down the volume and it wouldn't be a problem. Like, it's louder than it should be.
Mm.
The controller vibration in the game is also very strong, especially right at the beginning cutscene because of the amount of explosions. It really seems excessive and there's no way to really turn off vibration. So, I mean, that's a small complaint, but it's
I don't remember it vibrating for me. It might have just been, I don't know. Do you use 360 or Xbox One controller?
I use 360.
That might be it.
The final complaint I have is very, very small, but there's no tutorial telling you how the game works and what buttons actually do what. You are left to figure out what buttons do on your own, and later on there are some tips that are telling you things like the fact that you can destroy items if a robot shoots them, but it doesn't tell you the very basics. I'd say for $4.99, which is very cheap, it's definitely worth a recommended try. It you'll get a couple hours of enjoyment out of the game for sure.
See, I think being only $4.99 earns a fuck it, why not?
It would if it was, I don't know, more enjoyable. Like, I liked it, but I didn't find it so enjoyable that I'd recommend it, getting it.
Because I had a lot of fun with it when the one guy from Badland, Xander, was on the show, which will be in an episode next week, probably early next week, with Eternal. So with our vaccine review, should be that episode. Xander was talking to me about Boar and asked if I played it, and I said that I didn't. David Bruin, do you have a platform preference? It's PS4 only, isn't it? Talking to people in chat while I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I said that I would try it and I would stream it. So if you jump on our Beam, I actually have a video on demand of me playing that for, you know, maybe an hour-ish or so. I had a lot of fun with it. I did think there was a lot of trial and error to it of like, well, do I do this jump? Nope, I died. Let me start over. Thankfully, the puzzles aren't difficult enough that there's not too much like time lost if you die.
No. Each room is its own checkpoint. Yeah. You can get through rooms pretty quickly.
Although that second boss battle, for how long it was, I was paranoid that I was going to die with the falling boulders.
That's exactly what I was referring to with the, it can be frustrating because you die in one hit and you have to restart from the beginning of the battle because there's no checkpoints. That's exactly what I was referring to, was that second boss fight.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it.
I died right at the end.
I honestly think for $5, it rides the border between buy it and fuck it, why not? Because I had a lot of fun with it, but hey.
Well, that's okay. We can have two different opinions.
That's the point of reviews, that everyone has their own opinions.
And plus, I mean, I like Badland games, but I think there's definitely been ones that I've enjoyed more that they've published.
Yeah. I think I would love to see it come to console eventually. I asked them and they're like, we can't really comment on that. We have nothing to share at this time. So it might, you know, depending on how well it does on Steam, it might make the jump over, but who knows? I enjoyed it. And I'm the only person that matters.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's just move on.
All right, let's talk about a Steam game that I haven't had time to play. Slime Son, developed by Fabraz or whatever, published by our friends at Head Up Games. We don't have a release date or a price for this because it's not slated to release until April sometime. But they wanted people to get the word out about the game, so keep in mind, this is a very, very early preview of it. This is not a review, just early impressions. We will cover this one later in the future. In a full capacity, but Slime Son was minding his own business when suddenly a giant worm appeared and gobbled him up. Deep within the worm's belly, Slime Son has to face a decision: be digested by the incoming wall of stomach acid, or jump, slide, and slime his way through the worm and back out its mouth. CJ, you dabbled with this one, so what are your thoughts?
Slime Sand is a platformer all about speed. The goal is to make it to the end of each level as quickly as possible. The platforming in the game is quick, and you can jump, dash, and slime, which means sliming is basically going through like green items. There are like blocks and stuff that are green, or sometimes there are even enemies that are green, and if you slime, you can go through those enemies. I'm sad that I didn't get to put as much time as I wanted because of one big issue, which I'll talk about in a second, but it really makes me feel bad because I almost didn't want to talk about this game this week because I wanted to wait until I could actually have enough time to really play it. I only got to play like 10, maybe 10 levels before I just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
The game took a bit of getting used to, and once I got it, I was enjoying myself, but my one big issue right now is the controls, which shouldn't be a problem come launch, but right now controllers aren't supported. Or at least mine isn't. Like, the Xbox 360 wired controller is not supported. This meant that I had to use a keyboard. The issue with that is, while most things are customizable, some things aren't, and that made it incredibly awkward to control. I play left-handed, which means I use the arrow keys for movement, and my jump is tied to the delete key. I wanted to make my dash the shift key, but I couldn't do that, and that's because, as it turns out, although the shift key wasn't listed as something that was marked in the customization options, shift is actually tied to doing the sliming. And while the trophy times were around 20 to 30 seconds for each level, I was consistently around a minute and a half to 2 minutes. Because it is incredibly awkward to try to press all those buttons and be able to combine them when I play left-handed like this. This is definitely a game that I want to look back at once I have a controller. So that works. So if they want to email you whenever controller's support gets added, or if they change the ability to, you know, change what controls are for sliming, it might make it easier as well.
I'm assuming that that's what stuff like this is for, so that they could get some early feedback on what's working, what isn't working.
I hope so, because I felt bad that I really couldn't play much of it because I was just having so many issues trying to play it. And by the time I was done, it was like I just couldn't really get into it because of the controls. The visual style is definitely unique and looks great for the game. But warning, while it looks good, it can get to your eyes after a little bit and start to strain them. Because
it has
a
very unique look to it.
Very, like, outlandish colors scheme and just weird look that's great, but it will fuck with your eyes. I think the idea of the game is really cool, and I love the way it looks. I definitely keep an eye out on the game in the future, and it sounds like I was complaining a lot during the preview, but it's just something that should be addressed by full release with the controls. So I'm really hoping that soon enough I can try it with a controller or perhaps a changed keyboard layout and be able to enjoy it more and actually talk about the game more.
Sounds good. Yeah, it's definitely something I'm keeping an eye on, so hopefully they add some legit controller controls to the game. You might want to, I don't have a copy of the game myself, but have you tried different controllers at all? Have you tried you could just plug in an Xbox One controller.
Well, the problem is my Xbox One controller has a bad port for the plug-in. Like, it's fucked up. And so it just keeps disconnecting. I tried to do that.
Yeah, that'll fuck things up.
Yeah, I got mad at a game one day, and, you know, that happens.
You dumb bitch. That'll teach you.
I need to stop getting mad. But, you know, if you get mad, you just don't see anything anymore.
I just got a Steam alert that a game on my wish list is on sale, and fucking Pillars of Eternity is down to $17.99. Holy shit.
Cool.
Normally $45, so I might have to jump on that.
Well, that's cool.
Anyway, one final game to talk about tonight is called Mervels, a VR adventure developed and published by Vitruvius VR, released February 21st on PlayStation VR for $19.99, is also available on Steam for Oculus and Vive. Mervels is an open-world RPG platformer built specifically for third-person VR, with over 6 to 8 hours of gameplay. In Mervels, you are tasked to defeat Balazar the Evil and save the four picturesque Mervel worlds from imminent destruction. As stated, this plays like an third person, over the shoulder. I wouldn't say an RPG. It's more action adventure in the Zelda vein. I was reminded of Project Spark when I played this game. Have you dabbled with Project Spark at all?
I'm sad to say that I didn't get a chance before the servers got shut down for that game. And
well,
now,
if anybody who is listening has dabbled with Project Spark, there was someone who made like a Zelda clone in the game, which was a fantastic use of Project Spark. This game reminds me a lot of it, just in how everything feels, how everything is laid out. It plays standard action-adventure, Zelda-style, third-person. You go to different worlds. You have to get through a lot of collectibles, hack-and-slash your enemies, stay alive, finish quests, move on. It's an enjoyable game. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's not very, I don't know how to put this, it's not very memorable, but not in a bad way. Like, it doesn't do anything really wrong. It does everything decently enough. It's a lot. It's enjoyable. It's fun. It keeps you coming back and playing for more. But a few days later, thinking back to the game, and it's so hard to just remember details of it. It doesn't really stick in your mind that well.
Okay.
It doesn't have that hook to keep you in. So I wish that it had more of a hook to keep you enthralled. While I was playing, I was having a blast. I would love to see more of the game. I would love to see more of what Vitruvius could do. There were little issues like easy deaths. Some of the areas, it would feel like you're jumping on something, but I don't know if it's like the collision is off or if like the detection is off. The hit detection is weird. That's why I get Project Spark had a lot of that, where it felt like it was kind of like stapled together from a lot of different elements. But again, it's not in a bad way. Like, it works, it does what it's supposed to do. And it's good to see a VR game that's not just, hey, here's a first-person sword hack and slasher, a shooter. You know, it was good to see something real and different. They had plenty of options there to help with any kind of motion sickness that you might feel. They have ways that you can, for like rotating the camera, you can do the snap rotation, or you can have smooth rotation, which I went with the snap because it was easier. For the actual camera trailing you, you can either have the camera fly behind you at a steady pace, or you can have like a fixed camera that when you hit the button, it jumps to wherever you are. Which is is very helpful, and it helps ease people into the whole VR third-person stuff. Again, a lot of collectibles, lots of stuff to explore in the levels. I just wish it were more memorable. I don't know. I think the $20 price tag might hurt it a bit, but you got to remember that VR tax. So
yeah, $20 is like $10 if it's a normal game.
If this was a $15 game, I could give it a buy it for VR owners who are looking for something to play. At $20, it's got to just stick it to try it. That extra $5 seems little, but you know, I guess that comes down to your opinion. It's fun, it's enjoyable, it looks good, it plays well. So give it a try. If you got nothing else going on with VR, give it a go. I feel bad that it has to compete with the Psychonauts VR game that came out the same week, which we'll have a review on that on our next episode. I tried to have it for today, but my PSVR was acting wonky, so I did like a hard shutdown of the system, and I'm leaving it sit for a bit.
Okay, makes sense. But that sucks.
Yeah. Hey, that's me for waiting too long. So.
Oh, well, we all get that feeling. I mean, you got enough shit to cover. Sometimes you just gotta...
Yeah, I think 10 games on a show is good enough for you sons of bitches.
Honestly, yes. In fact, it's a little overboard. There's no way everybody buys all of these games that we give a buy at this point.
I know. And hey, we got more coming next week. So,
yay!
That is it for this show. Music, I didn't even think about, really. Maybe I'll... fuck, what do I have new? I don't know what I have new.
weren't we talking about ask that guy, there was three tracks on the page for the Kickstarter. You could ask if those are okay to play.
I'm sure they'll be good. Hey David, David Bruno in chat, can I play the songs from Masquerade Prisma? So I'm sure we'll play something. You'll hear music.
It'll be there.
You're gonna hear music right now.